Hello and welcome everybody to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I'm your host for today. My name is Mitch and this is episode 266, brought to you by Advent Games and our phenomenal Patreons. I am here today, it's a special episode today. We are here at South by Southwest Sydney in the Alienware Arena at Fortress. We have a big crew with us today up here on stage. So we'll kick off by saying hello to Adrian down the end. How you doing, Adrian?
Very good. It's been a crazy week.
Yeah, and tell us, you're down here especially from Brisbane today?
Yep, all the way down from Brisbane. It was a great experience from the start to finish at this joint. I've slept in many of the audience's hotel rooms since I've been here. In fact, almost 30% of them by the looks of the numbers. So, yeah, it's been wild.
Yeah, and next in the list, Jules. How you doing, Jules?
Good, all the way from the western suburbs.
Yep, good to have you here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Having a good time.
Great. One of our newer members, Dana, this is the first time you've done a live pod recording.
Yes, it's only my third podcast and I'm doing it live, so I'm quite nervous.
You'll be right, I'm sure. But you've also made the pilgrimage down from Brisbane as well.
Yes, I have. It didn't take me much convincing to leave my kids. I was so grateful.
And Lauren, how are you doing, a fellow Sydney-sider?
Yeah, good, mate. Not been to the Fortress in this part of Sydney before, so it's, yeah, been really cool.
Cool. And, of course, the Sasquatch himself all the way from Warrnambool in Victoria. How are you doing, Connor?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I got in by whale ferry on Wednesday night after going horse and cart all the way to Melbourne Airport. So that's
nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah. They've upgraded it to horse and cart.
Yeah.
The donkey's gone.
Donkey's dead. Yeah, unfortunately.
Little did you know, the horse was in the cart and Connor was pulling it. All right. So thanks everyone for coming out. It's here in the audience to listen to us today. We are a board game podcast. We like to just chat about board games, talk about things we like in the hobby, and make board games more accessible to everyone in the community. So what we're going to do today is, because we have been here at South by Southwest all week, we thought we'd have a conversation about our time here, some of our highlights, some of the things we've enjoyed, and let everybody know about that.
Some of our lowlights.
Well, Adrian's got some lowlights.
Waking up yesterday was the lowest light ever.
But it was a highlight for one of our audience members, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. My bed buddy.
Yeah, your bed buddy. And not only did he give you his bed, he gave you his preferred side of the bed.
I think I stole that. So I got them on a technicality. Someone was like, he said he likes that side of the bed, and you said, tough, and I dove on it and I passed out.
So we'll come back to more of the Adrian escapades as we go, but I'm going to go to Dana first to say, Dana, you've come down to the convention here, or the expo and the festival, and it's the first you've spent with us as a group, and the first sort of big sort of organised game event that you've been to. What are some of your experiences and what have you enjoyed? What's some highlights for you?
This was a great experience for me. I sort of actually feel a bit emotional about it because, being a stay-at-home mum, I haven't had anything like this in my life. But just to be able to come here and meet all these people that I only know, like some kind of weird tag name on Discord or I know someone on Facebook, to be able to put a face to a name has been fantastic, and just to be able to meet everybody. Adrian once told me, and this was...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Adrian once told me, this was when I first started following the podcast and everything, he said, you should join Discord. It's like family. And I tried it, and I thought, I don't even know what he's talking about. It's nothing like that. But I can see that. I can really see that. And that is just an amazing thing. It's like as rare as Chocos in Woolies. But I'm going to... I like to go off on tangents. But
welcome.
Go on. Go off on a tangent.
Like, we've got this, like, little set of groupies here in the audience. And I... Yeah.
Littles in capitals.
Jace, Julian, Peter, Ben, Chris, Tom, Harry doing the photography, and you. And I just think, I don't even know. Am I in a cult?
That's right. Dana, we're all wearing yellow shirts. You are 100% in a cult. Like, let's face it.
But it's a lovely cult. Like a really wonderful cult.
That is what
Can
they all say.
Can you have a wonderful cult? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, it feels like a cult, but a really good one.
Well, I'm glad it feels. I've got the Kool-Aid out the back. We'll have some of that later. Jules, how's your week been?
The week has been fantastic. Just catching up with people, meeting new people, getting to play lots of games. I think one of the things I was hoping we could do, we managed to pull it off yesterday, was to play Two Rooms and a Boom and with a group of 20 plus people, and that was just epic fun. Lots of laughter, lots of shenanigans.
So just give us a bit of a rundown on Two Rooms and a Boom and what's the go with that game?
Yeah, it's a simple social deduction game that takes exactly 15 minutes to play because it's timed rounds. And basically you've got the blue team that has a president, red team has a bomber, and the bomber wants to be with the president, and the president doesn't want that. And so it's figuring out who's whose social deduction, but you actually play in two separate areas, ideally two different rooms, and you do prisoner exchanges between those rooms in between each round. It's lots of fun, lots of laughter, and without fail every time, the group is always talking about the game for like 10, 15 minutes afterwards about, oh, I can't believe you said that, I thought you were this one, and yeah, good fun.
Yeah.
I've played that game a few times now, but it was the first time that I'd played it where we added a role which was called the Hot Potato. And the way the game works is you have the little tag on the bottom of your card that you hold, which represents you and your role in the game. And you can just share the colour so everyone can see the colour. And my colour, being the Hot Potato, was grey, which is also the colour of the mistress and the wife. So I could have been one of those roles. But the first time I got the Hot Potato, which makes you swap cards with another player, no matter what, I had it. And James, your partner, came up to me, started to talk to me. He's like, do you want to share cards? I was like, nope, there's only one way this card's going. It was straight to you. Because I was like, sorry, James, I can't. And then he was real suspicious on me. But all I wanted to do was show you the cards. So you just go, oh, you... and then have to swap.
Yeah,
so.
Can't say what I said there. He got me bad. And... Yeah, without going into too much detail, I got it out with the next time I got it away and thought I was finally free to that. Only 35 seconds later, it came back from Julian. So that was great, yeah. I'm not great at those games. I have a bit of trouble thinking through how it's all going to play out. But that Hot Potato card made it totally mental because you would find out a piece of information and you'd go, okay, so I know person X is that. Then they go mingle with the person with the hot potato and for all you know, they're not that anymore. They could be something totally different. So it just threw a total spanner in the works, but it really made a good game.
For the listeners at home, the hot potato card has a picture of a hand grenade on it. Yeah. That's because, what we're handing around.
Because I think the person who ends the game with a hot potato automatically loses, correct?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you do not want that hot potato. So cool. So Lauren, how about you? What's some highlights have been for you on the festival?
Oh. I have to say, Adrian, I was super disappointed my partner didn't end up with the hot potato. That was all I was trying to orchestrate. I really have enjoyed playing games with you lot a lot.
Aww.
I know. And I'm not a stay-at-home mum like Dana, but I just don't get out much. So this has been nice. Playing Veiled Fate and Bristol and just the layers of lies and deception... it's just been
and
really
we play
fun.
Games too.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, just being able to spend time with you guys and actually play some games and not have to try to sort out editing and recording and things. Yeah. It's just been really fun. Yeah,
I've got to say, you bring up Veil Fate. For those listening, Veil Fate is kind of like, it's kind of like a board game cross with a social deduction. So where you get these hidden roles. And the version we played with the number of people we had, we were in teams. So you had... Or you either had another person on the same team or you were on your own and you didn't have a partner on the team. So you're trying to work out who the person is that you're working with. And I think it was the first turn that Connor and I were sitting next to each other, and I thought he might be blue, I was blue. And I turned to Connor and said, did that move make you feel a little blue?
You cheated. You basically cheated.
No, you're allowed to talk. You're allowed to talk.
You are allowed to talk.
And I think Connor's reply was,
well, I wasn't green with envy about it. But do you know what? I was sort of like looking for cues, and I saw you kind of like match eyes with Aidy, which I do a lot, let's face it. We match eyes quite often.
Always.
But I saw you. I thought you tapped your phone screen, and because it was black, I thought that was your signal to him to say, oh, I'm black?
Yeah, no, it's just I'm addicted.
No, he tapped it multiple times. It was Morse coding blue.
Yeah.
It's like slow dot, dash, dash, dot.
But that was cool because we were at the beginning, we're like, oh, when are you going to use these powers? So you've got a list of powers that you can use, but they're really expensive. And normally you've got to be able to play a card to move or gain a card, and that's what determines your votes. But early on, everyone was giving me a hard time because I locked something out of a space. Like, oh, of course Connor ruins the game from the beginning. I was like, no, I have a plan. And lo and behold, who won, Mitch?
Of course we did.
Yeah, blue, the best colour one. So, yeah. Hey, just a big...
It might have had to do with the fact that we were sitting next to each other. So as soon as we figured out we were together, there was nothing anyone could do to stop our turns.
And we definitely failed forward. Like, it wasn't a case of, like, two masterminds coming together. It was...
No.
Yeah, two of the three stooges working.
Yep, two negatives created a positive. Great. Yeah, so next on the list is me, I guess. So, I will say the same as what everyone said. It's been great being here with everybody and we've had a great time. In terms of standout moments, there's been a few for me, but one that does stand out, maybe for the wrong reasons, is the game of Condottieri, which we played yesterday. Condottieri is a game where you're trying to capture regions of Italy by playing cards to have the highest strength in that region by the end of the round. And the objective is to get either all five of your tokens out, which is very, very, very difficult, or three of your tokens in adjacent regions. And we'd been playing for a long time. There are a few of the other members of the audience, I think, were playing at the time as well. And it all boiled down to one last region on the board that was up for grabs, and Adrian, Jules, and myself all had two adjacent regions to that region. So whoever was going to come out on top in this region was going to win. I think Jace had the choice to choose that region, and so he pushed us all into this Mexican standoff. And we all sort of had our plans to go through. And there's a card in the game, I should probably tell you, it's called the Scapegoat. I think it is. That's the return. Turncoat card. And when it's played, the round immediately ends. There's no more cards played. The person who is in the lead at that time wins the region. So we were playing, and I was in a position where I had a card that would eliminate the highest card that had been played at the time, all of them. I knew Jules had a 10, and I knew Adrian had a 10, and my highest was a 6. So the only way I was going to be able to beat them was to draw both of their 10s out and then use my bishop card, which would eliminate both of their 10s. So Jules had already played his 10. He only had two cards left. One of them was a 10. And Adrian hadn't played his 10 yet. So I was waiting, just kind of slow playing my hand to milk Adrian's 10 out. And then Jules played the turncoat and ended the game because he was still on 10 of the highest.
I think I jumped out.
I think you jumped out of the seat.
You went crazy.
And I was scared the crap out of me.
I was gutted because I had exactly what I needed to beat him. It was just a matter of timing. And if there's anyone I don't like losing to more than Jules, they don't exist. It's Jules.
Well, the funny thing is I actually had the same cards to beat you guys. It's just about playing them in the right order at the right time. And I had a priest one that deleted a 10 as well in my hand.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out when I needed to play it. And the odds of Jules having that one turncoat card was so small, I just didn't even think about it. And then it was over. And I was like, oh, that's it. Like, I've lost. And I never win those types of games. And I was being real smug because I played it like you. I had a load of cards. So I was ready to go, and they only had like two or three each, so I was just going to play them out.
And it was one of the longest games of that game I've ever played. We'd all sort of sat back, and we'd all bided our own time, and we'd all sort of played the long game to run the marathon as opposed to the sprint. And then Jules playing that card, it was like you and me tripped over each other at the finish line. And yeah, but it was an amazing moment, and that's why we play games. You know, for those sorts of times when that happens, those are the things that you take away, and those are the types of things that you'll remember from our experiences all along.
One of the cool things that I got to do is, number one, I got to feed Dana's kind of closet addiction with, you know...
Oh, my God, yeah. They're smelling.
Yeah. I bought a couple of sealed games, and one of them was Cat in the Box. So I said to Dana, look, Dana, you feel free to open the box and, you know, partake in your habit.
Yes.
But you need to teach
that's
it to me.
That's the rule now. Everybody you need to teach it to me.
So Dana was kind enough to teach myself and a couple of others. So Dan, Manny and Harry, although I'm not sure. I think Harry's played it before.
I don't think Harry enjoyed it.
I don't think Harry enjoyed it. For Cat in the Box. So what Cat in the Box is, it's a trick-taking game. So if you play, you know, Euchre, 500... even some of the more modern ones that we talk about, so like Niet. But none of the cards have suit colours. They're all black. And you have to choose what your suit is going to be on a dial. So you need to sort of bet at the start saying, OK, I think I'm going to win this many tricks. And then the dial then acts as a way to determine what your card colour is. But the cool thing about this is that if you don't have a card that you can play, it then creates a paradox, which ends the round immediately. So you might have a 6, a 7 and an 8, but if all the 6 and the 7s and the 8s on that colour have been taken up and you can't play another colour, then the paradox has been created. But what it also has too is it's kind of got this little spatial puzzle in the middle where you're lying down tokens of your colour. And as long as you get the number of tricks that you win correctly, you also get that the adjacency puzzle. So it's really, really, really cool. Unfortunately, I think it was a bit of a low light was Harry's enormous score of negative 4. so he's just giving me the thumbs up there. So, it was great. Like, because we haven't got to play many games together, and we've actually played a few now. So it was really nice. And like, I love giving you a hard time about your. your addiction.
I recorded that addiction, and Dana, I don't even know, realised that
I
recorded it.
Yeah, that's right.
And you guys were riding the train home, and I sent it to you.
Yep.
And then you were like, oh, that was so good, you know, well recorded. It was like, you didn't realise that that wasn't staged.
It looked set up.
It looks like it's set up. I said, you look like a pigeon.
So for those who may not have listened to our previous episode,
I was trying to not embarrass Dana too much.
Oh, no.
Well, let me go ahead and do it for you.
Okay.
So for those who haven't listened to our previous episodes, Dana, there was a question of the pod a couple of episodes ago that was, what's an unusual thing you enjoy about board gaming, or what small pleasures do you get out of board gaming? And Dana's was she enjoys sniffing the box when she opens a new game.
It's not a joke.
So she loves the smell of the cardboard. She loves. She gave her a deck of cards just the other day and said, hey, do you want to smell these ones, Dana? And she smelled them. She went, poor quality cards.
I have to say as well, there's like a process to this madness as well. You know those little sand gardens you get, like the Japanese... You know, have them. It was like that. It was like a finesse to her operation.
Yeah.
It was like the string came off, then the box went down, straightened it up, looked at it, checked it, turned it over, checked the thickness of the box lid, and was like, this is a good lid. Give it a bit of flex. She goes, you can tell because of this. I was like, you are mental.
You get those people that do quality control. The factory Stana just standing there like, not that one. No. Get it out.
Which is why I thought it was set up, because it was like
perfect.
Completely.
Like, yeah.
It was crazy.
It was funny because we had some games available to us that were still in shrink. And I decided...
Your heaven.
Sorry?
Your heaven.
Oh, no. I just sat there all day. Anyway, I was opening one up, and I really honestly do it without thinking. It's just habit. And I turned around, and Manny was looking at me, and he was like... I said, I'm so sorry. It's just habit. I don't even think about it. And he said, you really do that.
That's That's a classic. So yes, so yeah, so we all had a blast. Is there any other times people want to share or incidents that have happened through the last week that we want to talk about? Well, before we get on to Adrian's
Friday night
exploits.
Actually, it's funny because we've been doing this podcast for just over 3 years, and we've grown as a family, right? Like, we all know each other very well. And I remember that we all got to go away quite early on in our podcast group, and we went to a retreat, and we all got to hang out with each other and each other's families and do these different things. And one of the best things was to hear, actually, Mitch's son, who was, I think, 17 at the time, maybe 16?
16, 17 back then, yep.
You know, kind of come out of his shell and how he described that. And I was kind of like able to sort of aspire to that with my own son, who's only 8. And I was kind of like, not envious or anything, but I really appreciate it. And I was like, that's an amazing thing for his dad to be, you know, seeing that in his son and him to come out and hang out with all of us reprobates, mainly me. But yeah, having a great time. And it was really cool because his other son, Ethan, who's younger, maybe 15 now.
Yep, 15.
Yeah. He's almost done the same thing at this trip. He's come out of his shell, because every time I've been to your house, it's, hi, straight in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Never hear from him. But now he's like been hanging out. And one of my highlights was I actually convinced them both to enter a Counter-Strike Go tournament together. And I've played Counter-Strike. And I mean, I'm talking before Steam was available. So we're talking 15, 16, 17 years ago or something. Haven't played it since. And we entered this tournament. We did tragically, but they had a great time, and we all won playmats, and then it was on. We just were so excited, so happy. It was just, all they talked about was like, we got this playmat, we won this, and you got a kill, and you did this, and blah, blah, and they just had a great, great time with it. So yeah. that was a big highlight for me. So.
It was very good, and they did spend the next few days just racking up as many playmats as they could.
So that was so cool. But so we're at South by Southwest, and it's, there's some tech stuff, which Adrian talked about before. There's also been a gaming section, which we've sort of been based around. Part of that has been video games. So there's been some really cool indie games that's been available. But there's also board game stuff, which was the main thing that was going on yesterday. And I actually got to catch up with some of the crew we met at PAX. So I got to catch up with Ivan and Mike from Sandtime Games. And I found out that their Kickstarter, their game Guild of Realms, has gone to Kickstarter. And they've hit their goal. They've hit their goal already. So after 3 days, they've already hit their goal. So a big shout out to those lads. They've put an absolute mountain of work into that. So that was a really nice experience.
Gilded Realms?
Gilded Realms, yeah. Gilded Realms. So they were showing it off. And I actually walked past them. And they had the same demo that we were doing where it was, you know, 2 rounds, and I said, oh, so you're doing the 2-round thing? And he goes, actually, these guys want to stay and play the whole thing. So they sat there for the whole time and played the game. And I was like, oh, like, all the best luck to them. So they're just really nice people. They're local lads from Sydney. So, yeah. I think they've got a really, really cool game on their hands.
And it's been great, as you say, meeting other people in the industry, the designers and so forth that have been involved in this as well. And I'll throw to Lauren now, because Lauren and Dana actually presented one of the awards the other night, the awards ceremony.
But just before that, I actually want to mention Lee. I'll just do what I want.
Just do what you want.
Lee, one of our community members, has been designing an IKEA-themed game, and he's called it, working title is Packed Flat, I think. So he's got these 3D printed bits and the little, oh gosh, you saw them, what are they called?
Yeah, they're like little dowels.
Yeah, the little dowels, and you kind of Project L style are kind of drafting tiles and cards from the center to fill out and create little pieces of furniture that once you fill it out, you then get to construct it. So you slot in all the dowels and it clicks together and you place it somewhere in your apartment. And
can you build Calyxes?
You do build Calyxes.
Oh, I mean,
so good.
You don't get to keep them, Jules. Like, you know, you
dang.
And then you kind of place them with placement rules a la Feast for Odin to slot around your tiny apartment. And kind of like King Domino, you're wanting to arrange them so that you can multiply how many stickers and dots that are littered around the apartment are still showing times the number of that tile. So it's a really neat kind
it's
of
cool. It's really cool.
Tile placement puzzle game with huge toy factor. So I'm really excited for that one.
You said, I was sort of like walking past And you said to me, do you want to build some furniture? We're not playing anymore, but do you want to build? I was like, heck yeah. So I just sat down and played with the dowels. And yeah, it looked really, really cool. And it's the toy factor is huge, huge with that. So yeah. Anyway, you're going to talk about the awards.
Yeah, we got to present the Tabletop Award. It was a really great event. I was actually really impressed with the turnout and the kind of sense of community around people supporting these indie video games when the Game of the Year Award was announced, and there was just kind of like eruptions of cheers and things like that, which was really cool. Dana, what was your experience with the awards?
Same thing, but it was great just being up in the, whatever that is, green room or something, whatever. Yeah. I don't know, some sort of room.
Plenty of box sniffing in the green room.
That's it. But, oh my God, it was free drinks. Anyway. But it was like a real nightclub kind of vibe with karaoke, and everyone was so excited. I haven't been to a nightclub, I think, since they banned smoking. It was like such a different experience for me, and I don't even drink anymore. So it was.
Don't worry, great. Adrian had your share.
But it was all and these mine. Gamers like doing karaoke and supporting each other, and we're obviously going to lead into probably your escapades or something. But Adrian, like that memory of you, all these gamers around the stage, and you're there like belting out a Little Mermaid, the Little Mermaid song.
Part of Your World is my favourite song, my favourite, one of my top 10 Disney songs, so I know all the words.
Oh,
it's fantastic. I didn't need to look at the screen. me and Finn sing that in the car, honestly, maybe 10 or 15 times a week.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to it, it's so good.
Yeah, it was a great experience, and everybody, I don't know, like it's been, just been really great. People were asking about the podcast and everything. It was really good. It was a great experience.
On that same night, we had a bit of an exclusive. Finally, it happened.
Oh,
Mitch
yeah.
got up on the stage at Suck Informer in front of like 300 people.
Yeah.
Crazy. There's no way I would have attempted
if
that.
If you weren't here, you missed it. Suffering your jocks. You'll never have it again. but so that was the Friday night, Adrian, and I thought I would throw to you now to share some, you know, of your experiences.
Don't
or
say
at least
memories, because I don't have any.
I was going to say, at least the ones you can remember, if there are some.
Friday. I mean, to be honest, when we arrived here, we got here a bit early, because obviously Dana and Lauren were giving the award out, and it was very quiet, and you always have that sort of sense of dread of, like, is there going to be anyone else coming? Like, is it... But within a couple of hours, it was like crazy. It was banging. It was insane. It was so packed. But everyone, you're right, was having a great night. And then Mitch tried to make me go home at 9:15. And I wasn't going to let that happen. And I said, I'll just sleep outside on the street because I don't care. And that might have happened, but I didn't. I was lucky enough to go out with some of the guys from here. And then we went on to a couple of nightclubs. And I got back to bed at like 2:30. Then got up at 5 a.m. And I remember just thinking, like, how
will
I manage?
Who is that man?
Yeah,
who's
that guy next to me? How did I end up here? And I took a selfie and I sent it to MJ, who's my partner. And I said, if that's not Jason Haig behind me, I'm in trouble. Because I wasn't sure. but yeah, it was a great night, a great vibe. Like, that's the thing. I think everybody, I'm going to say it wrong. High tide lifts all boats or whatever.
Yep, yep.
Like, I think everybody is elevating each other and supporting each other. I think that was a really cool thing to see. So
I think we've probably said enough about South by Southwest as for now. So we will move on to our next segment. Before we do, I just want to talk about a couple of announcements that we've got, things coming up in the future. So we've got the Melbourne Game Day on the 4th of November at Preston's Town Hall. Tickets are still selling for that, and our scheduled teaching sessions will be available to be booked on the 28th at noon. So if you're in Melbourne on the 4th of November and you'd like to get along for a game day, that's a full game day run by us, for those who haven't been already, and they're a great time. The Sydney Game Day it will be on December 9th at the Castle Hill RSL. That's another 12 hours of gaming. Tickets are not on sale for that yet, but will be as soon as Jules pulls his finger out and puts the side up. No, we'll get around to it pretty soon. We've been pretty busy leading up to this, but those tickets will go on sale shortly. Then we have the Brisbane game day on the 30th of December, the big one, just before New Year's. That's going to be 10 a.m. till 2 a.m. A huge day of gaming.
I'm so excited. I'm going to start playing something crazy at midnight, like
on Mars with Dave.
Maybe on Mars with Dave. Maybe.
Yeah, he'll love that. That's at the Westside HQ in Corinda. And the last announcement to make is for the big one, which is PlayCon, which is our three-day convention that we'll be running next year in July. The website for PlayCon is live, so if you want to check that out, it's play-con.com. You can go there and you can sign up for the mailing list, or you can check out our Facebook page for all the updates there. But if you're into gaming and you'd like to check that out, that'll be in Hurstville at Club Central. For 3 days over the July 12th, 13th, 14th, I believe. Check that out. It's going to be massive. So there are the events we've got coming up. If you're into gaming and you want to be a part of the Board Game Barbecue community, get along and check all those things out. That will take us to our question of the pod. So the question of the pod from last episode that we were going to discuss were, what were your favourite moments with Mike? Because one of our members, Mike, just recently left the pod. He had his last episode in 265. So we went to our community just to ask what were some of the special moments or things they remember about Mike's time with us. So I'm going to throw to Connor to read out some of those responses that we got.
Cool. So I got a few responses here. First of all, is from our good buddy Sarah. She says, the one where he told me that I didn't have a heart because I didn't like Calico. I was like, Mike is really starting to get to me. Next one is from MJ, believe it or not, 80. So MJ says, can't go past the 5-minute dungeon v Nemo's war fight from the first year of our bracket battle. Mike sold that game better than anyone ever has. Yes, Mike certainly has.
Just for some clarity on that, for the people who might not have heard of any of those games, 5-Minute Dungeon is a game you play in 5 minutes.
Yes.
It's very quick and quippy, you know, community, you know, play as a group. And Nemo's War is a game you play by yourself for hours. And Mitch loves that game because he loves being on his own.
It's possibly the biggest David and Goliath that we ever had in the bracket. So we had this bracket where we pitted games against each other, and those of us who were fans of those games had to argue the case of why they were better. And, yeah, I think it probably is the biggest disparity in terms of big, you know, crunchy Euro game, solo Euro game, versus little 5-minute light party game. And clearly Nemo's War is the better game, but somehow...
No, the populace doesn't believe
our community voted for 5-minute dungeon, which was an absolute travesty. But that's a bit too soon. That was 3 years ago. Can we just move on?
2.5 years ago.
Can we move on?
Okay,
please.
Our next one is from another good buddy of ours, Chris. It would be when he sizzled Balrati, so we played that game actually, a game that isn't even in English, and Chris himself sought out to get a copy, which he still hasn't played yet.
Have you got it yet, Chris?
Have I got it? Have I got the game?
Yeah.
It's in my bag. Yeah, there you go. Someone today, please play it with Chris.
He has the game. I don't think Chris buys games to play them.
No.
I think he just puts them on a shelf.
They're like decor, home decor.
Yeah.
That's enough from the audience. And the last one is, now please forgive me. So please forgive me for what I'm about to do to your ears. But another good buddy of ours, Draven, just posted a link to this song. And it goes like this.
Okay.
If you don't know what that is, that's Sandstorm by Darude, and that's because
we all thought it was R2-D2 having a stroke.
both are acceptable. No, so Mike taught lots of us the game of
archaeology.
And there's a Sandstorm card, and he said with his game group, whenever he plays a Sandstorm card, you have to sing Darude by Sandstorm. So I'd have to agree there with
Draven.
That's one of my fondest memories of Mike for me.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the episode we do not fond memories of Mike, because we start with that 5-minute dungeon defeat. Anyway, so that brings us to the new question of the pod that we're going to ask today. And the new question of this episode is going to be, what's the most unique or unconventional board game that you've ever played? So I'm going to start with I know what Jules is going to say, so I'm gonna go to Connor.
Woo. So I had a long, hard think about this for 5 minutes before we recorded, and what I like in games is asymmetry, right? And a lot of times asymmetry, it's battling or area control or things like that. But a game came out a little while ago, and I actually got to interview the designer, and that is Merchant's Cove. So Merchant's Cove is really cool because it's asymmetry, highly asymmetric, but it's a worker placement game, and where each person is controlling a different merchant. You're selling the same type of goods, as in this, the what you're selling is a similar scoring system, but you're playing your own mini game, and that can range from a version of Potion Explosion, a game where like you're spinning the dial and then moving boats, dice placement, a set collection, and all this type of stuff. And each of the different merchants have different games and a different way to play them. But in the end, you're all reaching for the same goal. And there's even like some a little bit of worker placement that's a bit different from other ones as well. So with scoring, how many adventurers are in particular areas. So I think all that rolled up. The amount of work that the Carl and his team put into that is just sensational. So, yeah, that would be my vote.
And it's the Miko that does the art as well.
Yeah, Miko amazing. Does the art.
He's
so
very good at world building through art. Yep, for sure. I find that that's fantastic.
So. So how about you, AD? What's the most unique game you've ever played?
Well, for me, I'm going to steal Jules' one because I know he's going to be next.
So. We'll just put you two together because we don't hear from Jules anymore.
No, he's got a different one. But, yeah, for me, it is Kingdom Death Monster. I know I talk about this a lot. Probably way too much, but it's the only game that I've ever...
Not enough,
okay. It's the only game that I've ever continued a campaign, failed after playing it for 17 and a half weeks, 34 weeks, but 17 years in the game, because we'd meet every fortnight, and then reset and go back and do the whole thing again, because I wanted to do better. And I wanted to learn more about the game and see more. And for those who don't know, Kingdom Death Monster is an incredibly disturbing, dark, twisted world, which is just fantastic. Like, I love it. And it's just very different. There's lots of things. You come together as a group and you innovate and you do different technologies and you maybe get family names. So everyone then, every character then has a last name, and when you have offspring,
you've got a lineage.
Yeah, have a lineage, and you can tell stories about that lineage, and you do storytelling, and then the storytelling then goes into being a saga, because the stories have been told so long that it becomes like a saga for the group. And then, you know, and those things give you benefits and bonuses and all these different crazy wild things. And that's just the settlement phase. That's nothing to do with the actual game where you actually hunt and track these monsters, which then once you've hunted and tracked certain things, you then go into a boss battler where you fight and upgrade weapons. And it's just so well done, and it predates a lot of the other ones like Oathsworn and these other bigger ones that are coming out now. Aeon's End Trespass is another that's been out more recently. But yeah, I just feel that dark, disturbing world is just so well done and so well executed with the mechanics that meet how the monsters move and fight. I mean, the game has Slender Man in it. Like, I mean, as soon as they had that, I bought that, and I've got that expansion. I haven't fought him yet, but just the fact that they add like stuff from our own world into this world just blew me away. So
yeah, do you want to add anything to that, drivel, Jules? I mean that
no, not much to add. It just very unique game, very unique experience, and a campaign that you can just go over and over and over again and have a totally different outcome. It's great.
Let's just talk about for a second too how you got your copy, because I remember you saying, I will never sell the Anachrony Big Box in my life. It will always be in my collection. And then you played one game of KDM. You sold that Anachrony Big Box to buy KDM.
That is true. That is very true.
He sold three Big Box games to buy KDM.
I'm trying to remember the other ones now.
They were that memorable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they must have been great if you can't even remember them.
No. But in all fairness, that game gets a lot of stick for being so expensive, right? But if I look at pound for pound, play for play, hour for hour, it's actually really low on like a price point for play versus time spent.
So. As much as I'd love to talk about that for more hours, I'm going to cut you off because you will rabbit on and on and on and on and on about that game forever. So I'm going to go to Dana and say, Dana, how about you? Have you played any unique, interesting games or what that you can think of?
I did want to mention a game that I played yesterday, and actually we played together with Adrian and another member of the public, but we were able to play test a game called Drift. And it's designed by a fellow called James Allen, and it's actually going to be published by Good Games, and it's coming to Kickstarter next year. And it's a racing game. I do happen to like racing games. But this was so different. And now I've played Flamme Rouge and Heat and Formula D, and this game is about... is similar, it's a race, around a track, around a racing track, but the way that you actually move is so different, because normally you're either rolling dice or playing cards to do that. But on this occasion, you're actually, you've got these tiles that represent your length of movement, you know, all the way from 1 to 5, I think it is, 1 to 5. And they've got like a little angle piece on the end. And the smaller pieces, so like a one piece that you'll place in front of the car, has a very big angle that you can move or turn to manoeuvre your car on the track. And then you go all the way up to a 5, so you'll move further, but your angle will be restricted, and you won't be able to manoeuvre the car around other cars as much. And the decision space between choosing which piece to use was... so good. And just to see, because we've all played racing games, like obviously us three, but to see a member of the public there and her reaction to this game, she loved it.
Mm,
she
absolutely.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah,
and that's because she won.
I was going to say, was the winning anything to do with that?
You spoiled it. But it was really funny. Like, it was a... we were just... honestly, Mitch and I were just... neck and neck the whole game. Adrian was just nowhere. No. He had no chance.
But Adrian was just
doing doughies in the corner.
But we were neck and neck the whole game, and it was like a photo finish. Like, we literally had to get down, like...
It was to the millimetre.
It was literally... And I was declared the winner, but...
No, you weren't.
No, I'm sure it was no. Me. Anyway... No. Anyway, we were there arguing over who was winning, and in the meantime, this other lady, this member of the public, who probably had struggled a little bit with the mechanics initially because she wasn't familiar with that kind of game, and we had sort of helped her throughout the game.
Yep.
She was having her turn while we were arguing over
totally
who had won, and she literally came right in between us.
I'd written her off.
Yeah,
she can't catch
us. She's not going to win.
Alana.
Yeah, Alana. So if you're listening, Alana, out there, good job. It was fantastic. Yeah. I thought you were totally out of it, and I was only focused on proving that my car was a millimetre ahead of Dana's.
Yeah. And she literally went straight between us and won the game.
It was pretty
and
epic.
It was fantastic. But what's really great about this game is the timing element.
Yes.
Yeah, so you get 2 turns where... you can just practice on how to use the pieces, because it's not just about your length of movement and your angle, but you're trying to drift. You're trying to skid out around corners and hit little markers or sections on corners, and that will give you points to be able to spend to do other actions. So, but to have this timing element where you only have 60 seconds to be able to place these tiles... is really great. It was fantastic, and it makes for a quick game as well. It was great.
Yeah, I say the same thing as you, Dana. It was fantastic. I've seen James demoing a lot at our game days over the last probably year or so, and he's been at PAX. I think he won one of the awards at PAX. Such a great game, phenomenal great game. So if anyone gets a chance to have a try of Drift, absolutely get on board. If you don't get a chance to try it out, keep an eye out for it next year on Kickstarter, because it's Insta back for me. I know my whole family will love it. I can't wait to play my sons in it. Yep. It's going to be excellent. Yeah, so really, really hit my wheelhouse. And Lauren, how about you? What's some uniqueness from yourself?
Well, I had 2 games that came to mind. So the first is Dread. It's a one-shot tabletop RPG that's horror-themed, but the skill checks for it are done by taking a piece out of a Jenga tower. And so you realise that the game of Jenga has the exact same cadence as a horror movie. There's like this tense build-up. slowly, things get kind of more and more precarious, and right on the precipice of where you're like, stuff's about to go nuts, it taking these out. And if you fail it, you die. It's very, very harsh, but it really makes for a really tense, really immersive, pretty quick and accessible tabletop RPG experience if you like the horror theme. So 10 out of 10 recommend.
Can you use normal Jenga? Is that what happens?
Yeah. You just get a normal
Jenga.
We
have a
tower.
Bones Jenga made of bones. That would be
really
rad. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Of course, why am I not surprised that you have something made of bones?
Yeah.
And the other one is a Japanese game called Tragedy Looper, which I was talking to Jules about the other day.
So cool.
So if you've ever kind of messed with either Japanese video games or JRPGs, you know the stories are just wild. Like, if you haven't, Google the plot of the Final Fantasy X video game. It is bonkers, certified bonkers. But Tragedy Looper is a one versus many deduction game where one person is playing as the mastermind and the others are playing as protagonists. And you'll play out 3 days. And essentially, the mastermind is just trying to have some sort of tragedy occur. If they do that, great, tragedy occurs, people die, whatever, something bad happens, go to the next day. If they get a tragedy every day, they win. The protagonists are trying to stop that tragedy from occurring. And if not, it gets to the end, there's funky time travel stuff, and you kind of loop back into the day, kind of like Groundhog Day style. And the tragedies can be a whole bunch of things. But the kicker is, you don't know what the tragedy is. It's a scenario-based game, but the only person who knows what scenario you're playing is the mastermind. So you don't know, if you're one of the many, who the characters are, what you're trying to prevent, who's going to do it, where and when. But you can't talk to one another. So you're programming actions, wild. You're programming actions to move around, to ask people things, to try stop some tragedy, who knows what, and then if it occurs at the end of the day, you then get the chance to chat as a team. But the mastermind can hear, so you'd be like, okay, I think I moved here because I thought this person was doing that, and so on and so forth, and then you just run it again, and you do that 3 times. It is really weird. The art style is very kind of intensely anime, very Japanese, but it just had a reprint, so it was pretty hard to get for a while, but now you can get it. Advent has it, for example, lots of places. Cool. But really weird, really cool game.
Right. All right, so that's our...
Hang on. I haven't talked about a unique game yet.
Yeah, you did. One of his. You don't get a separate game.
He tagged you on because he wanted to
talk. He tagged me along.
He took up your talking time.
No, I was going to mention Castell having a unique theme and just about human tower building. It being such a unique game, but another one that came to mind is probably more of a favourite would be Cosmic Frog. Just the weirdest, wackiest theme, and anyone who hasn't heard of it, you play as 3-mile-tall, immortal frog-like creatures that hop through space, eating shards of worlds, putting them in your gullet and disgorging them into your vault, meanwhile beating each other up and reaching down other people's gullets to steal the stuff they've eaten, and you punch people into outer dimensions. It is wild, it is silly, it is a lot of fun. Cosmic Frog is definitely an unconventional game.
Connor, there's something wrong with that end of the panel.
It really is.
There really is something wrong with that end of the panel.
You know what? They weren't on the blue team yesterday.
They weren't on the blue team. Yeah. That's what it is. All right. So thanks everyone for that. But as we always say, it's not about what we think, it's about what our community thinks. So please jump onto our socials, onto Facebook, onto Discord, onto Instagram, and comment and let us know what your most unique or unconventional board game is, and if we like your answer, if we think it's cool, we'll probably read it out on the next episode of the podcast.
Can I just say something about Instagram? As just what we're talking about Instagram?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Go on, Dana.
We're really trying to increase our exposure on Instagram. So if anyone who's listening or anybody here, it would be really helpful if you could follow us on Instagram. We are like so close to 2,000 followers.
And I know that Dana would love it and be really helpful if you made a secondary account and followed again.
Yeah. Doesn't matter how many accounts. Doesn't matter what your name is. Sorry?
Are we now less than 10?
I
think it's 11 to go.
Oh, did you check this morning?
I did.
Oh. We can ask him to sign up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay, so Lauren, you're going to give us a bit of a shout out for... Oh, sorry. Patreon shout-outs for Connor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as Mitch said at the top of the show, brought to you by our Patreons, so thank you guys so much. We've got so many great people, and we'll talk about your Patreon in a sec. But thank you to Ben Todd. Ben in the audience. Woo, thanks, Ben. Adam Ridgway, Ben Pepper, and my boy, Carl Van Ostren. So thank you to those four people. But it's not just about Patreon. Lauren, what are some of the other ways that people can reach us?
Well, there are plenty of ways to support the podcast other than donating. You can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a star rating or review, or on Spotify's new star rating system. It only takes a few seconds of your time, but means the world to us. You can also get involved in the Board Game Barbecue community by joining Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Discord. I've got on good word that if we get to 2,000 Instagram followers, Dana's going to get a tattoo. Tom Vassell's hat, right?
Yeah. Tom Vassell hat tat.
That's it. Okay, hashtag crush on Vassell.
Yeah, or you can support us by joining our Discord community. There's always games and chats happening, so get involved and come join the community.
Cool, thank you. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the formal section of the show, but because we are here live today, we thought we would do a bit of a throw out to an audience Q&A, so if anyone had any questions or wanted to grill us on anything at all, by all means, now's your opportunity to put up your hands, and we will send Adrian out into the crowd with a microphone. Don't be afraid of him.
Does anybody have any questions for us? Are we all good? I think we're good.
That segment's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. So good. So good.
That one. That's going to be, it'll be my favourite.
I can sit in the crowd and ask a question. Will that count?
Sorry?
I could go sit in the crowd and ask a question. Would that count?
Just go and twist Harry's arm and make him say something.
No. Here we go.
There we go. We've got one.
So there's so many different forms of art and media out there. What is it about board games that draws you in and keeps you coming back and want to give it up to your lineage as well and pass that down? Mm-hmm. What is it about board games and the storytelling of it that makes you so enthralled and want to...
Do this?
Yeah, do this, yeah. Exactly.
I'll take it first, if you don't mind. So, yeah, So I sort of started out in a bit of RPG sort of stuff, and a bit of video gaming was where I sort of was previously when I was younger. And from the RPG side of things, it was always such a chore to try and get all the people you need to play, and the DM or whoever was going to run the game had a lot of pre-work to do to set the game up, and it was just a serious overhead. And so as much as you try, the best laid plans would always go to waste because someone would have to pull out last minute or whatever, and it just wasn't something viable to do. Combine that with the fact, the other part of your question, with I've got two young sons that are growing up with me, and a daughter. She came a little bit later, but at the time it was two young sons. And they were getting sort of heavily into the video game side of things, as is the case now a lot with young people. And here I was trying to say, don't spend so much time on the screens, less screen time. And it was a little bit about how do I engage them with something that's fun and entertaining and working their minds and their brains, but at the same time get them off the screen so that they can have a bit of downtime from that. And board gaming just hits that niche perfectly, right? We can all play together. You can play cooperative games with your young kids if they need help. You can play together with them, so there's not that competition or that sort of, working against each other sort of side of it. And then with the RPG thing, it doesn't require all that setup. It doesn't require weeks of planning. It doesn't require everybody to be able to be available in the same night for hours and hours and hours. So you can usually pull, someone from your family in, or you can play with people who live close by, and it's not a huge commitment, time commitment and effort. So I find that it's just something that's away from the screens but still accessible whenever you have the urge to play. That's my answer.
For me, board gaming has changed my life. I still am quite introverted. I know people might not think that, but anyway, I'm very introverted, had mental health issues, things like that throughout my life, and just been socially probably just a bit awkward. But for me, board gaming, I have been able to go to social events, and I don't have
the pressure of having to sit in a conversation with someone and look at them in the eye all the time. I've got this board game that can break that tension. And actually, there are a lot of people I've found that actually are just like me. And I found board gamers incredibly accepting, far more accepting than, I don't know, the mothers that I've met at schools with my children or whatever. It's just been a great icebreaker for me. And the people that I've met have just been fantastic. And I mean, I love board games anyway because I love the art and I love the tactile nature of the pieces and it works my brain. But the biggest thing about board games have been the social aspect for me. And I only hope that one day my kids will realise that it will be... It's such a wonderful thing for them, and yeah. I hope I can pass it on to them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Dana. It's the social thing for me. I played a lot of sport growing up and loved the camaraderie and the mateship and the social, you know, memories that we created together doing that. And when I also played a lot of video games and had some of that, but board games seem to just hit different, just in a way that I really hadn't experienced before, having great social cohesion and memories built together. And for me personally, also, as I said, having played a lot of video games, board games for me, and it depends on what style you play, but just that mental stimulation that I haven't been able to find in any other way, it just twists and accesses parts of my brain that I don't do in my day-to-day job or doing other activities. And I just find that part really satisfying. I don't want to go back and find new ways to challenge my mind. So there's always these new games to discover all the time. And that's part of the excitement for me in the hobby.
For me, it's somewhat similar to, like, it's an amalgamation of all three of your answers, really. But for me as well, there's this sort of collector thing that's in this board game hobby. So I collected comics since I was 10. I still buy comics now, two or three a year, as like a treat, like key issues, not a collection. But with the board games, it almost feels that same strange addiction of buying the new thing, getting the shiny thing, opening it up like Dana does.
Smelling it.
Yeah,
but,
smell.
You know, like it's almost like a collector thing in me that enjoys that element of it as well. Like you might have played the first version of, let's say, Pandemic, and then you liked it and you had a great time, you played it with your family and friends, it was brilliant. Then they release another one that's got a twist on it and you're like, oh, I want that one. But I don't go, me personally, I don't then go sell the old one. I keep it and then I have three of them, and because I have this sort of collector sort of mentality, I suppose. So, yeah.
Mm. I definitely agree on the point of it kind of being a social lubricant in social settings for people who don't want to assert themselves or don't feel comfortable in social settings, to have kind of structure around which they can engage in social play. And I think that's why we see a lot of neurodiversity in the tabletop space, because it is less intimidating for people. In addition to what everyone said, I also really enjoy playing games solitaire, which if you tell people outside the board game space that you can also play games solo, they're like, what are you talking about? But it sounds bizarre. But I really like being able to engage in mindfulness and just sit with myself in a quiet space away from screens after work and just play something simple, in the same way that someone might enjoy knitting or might enjoy colouring in or something like that. It's just a time for me to be with myself and with my thoughts, and I really love that. In addition, I'm also really blessed to be able to use board games at work in a therapeutic context, and I find that they're a great way to engage kids in conversation. I work as a pediatric psychologist, and I can bring a game to them, and I can use it as a reward for therapy. I can use it to build rapport and engage a child in therapy, and so I've really enjoyed games in that space as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. As an educator myself, like, I think that's really important to have that and make them feel in a safe space and whatnot. I guess you've all kind of touched on it, right? But for me, one of the things I enjoy about the hobby is sort of associated with the social side of things. But that's actually seeing how other people play games, and just an interesting way of, oh, okay, I wouldn't have thought about doing that. Cool, I might try that next time. So kind of like what you were saying, Lauren, I'm maybe a little bit the opposite in that if I'm going to do something by myself, it might be a video game. because board games for me are the times to spend with other people, like whether it's you guys, part of our community or whatnot, my family. So that's my social time, and I really enjoy playing games with different people of different skill levels as well, because that in itself starts to tell a story as well. Hey, the way that I've played this tells a different story, and it doesn't have to be a complex story. It can just be a story of how the mechanics are interwoven into the gameplay and the theme as well. So that's what I really enjoy.
Great question. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to ask a question?
Hiya. I wanted to know what your gateway games were.
I can go first because my ones, sorry to Jules to jump in. I'm probably a little bit different because we always played board games as a family. Like I remember playing board games as a kid. So if we're not counting those ones, the one that kind of got me right back into the hobby was, like Adrian, I was a big comic book fan for a long time. And I strolled into this shop and I saw this game called Marvel Legendary. And at the time, you know, you were probably a bit, IPs and games, even video games, you're a bit like, a bit suspect. So I jumped on the reviews and they said, this is great. And I bought that and then I went looking for more expansions and sort of researched it. And then I found Geek and Sundry on YouTube because they were playing it. And then all of a sudden, all these games just opened up to me. So yeah, Marvel Legendary was mine, similar to Dominion and those card drafting, deck building games. So yeah, shout out to Marvel Legendary. It's it always holds a special part in my heart.
Yeah. There are three that come to mind with the group I was playing with years ago for more when I got into it in the modern sense, right? Like not my childhood ones, would be Bang. Lots of games of Bang, Cosmic Encounter, and Sheriff of Nottingham. All of those games have silliness and just lots of laughter. Great memories playing those three.
For myself, it was Pandemic. Like I loved playing something co-op. I went from hardcore World of Warcraft player in a guild with raiding three nights a week, and I really love that co-op element of being like a support in a game. So to go to Pandemic was like a natural thing to me to work together as a team, and I used to play a lot more co-op games than I do now. But I went straight from Pandemic, and I love the Cthulhu mythos and all that world, but I'd never experienced it in any kind of RPG or anything like that because I just wasn't into games. So I just Googled Arkham Horror game, and Arkham Horror 3rd Edition had just come out, and I just jumped straight into that. And to be honest, it took me hours to learn it, man. Like, I probably shouldn't have started there, but once I was in, it's one of my favorite and most thematic, story-driven sort of single-shot encounter experiences with almost cinematic-like experiences that you have with that game. And yeah, after that, I was just in. I was just buying whatever. And I think that's something that's quite common early in the hobby, like you buy this, you buy that, you try this, you try that, and you're trying all these different things constantly to try and find what you really, really like in games. Mm. And then you tend to sort of narrow that margin down as you get further and further into the hobby, and then that
your collection.
Yeah, but then yeah. I think that goes back the other way again, and you start widening out again and going, I've played 25 worker placement games, now I'm going to be just, social deduction, this, that, the other, and you buy all the best of the ones that you like and all these different mechanisms, so, yeah.
I think I remember a time when, I think I've told this story a couple of times to you guys, I was out in another town at a wedding and we'd taken the kids there the day after and we, kids being kids were like, take us into the toy shop, Dad, take us into the toy shop, and we sort of walked in and then at the back of this toy shop, they had all of these board games. It was like the TARDIS. It was like this tiny little shop, and then in the back there was just amazing wall-to-wall board game sort of shelves. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know this existed. Like, this has blown my mind. And not wanting to jump too far in straight away, because my kids at the time were quite small, so I wanted something, they could sort of get into as well. We went with Codenames Pictures and One Night Werewolf. The social deduction thing I love. I'm kind of pretty good at lying, I think. So that's kind of cool. And Codenames is just one of those games you play in teams. Everyone gets involved. It's super simple. I think the Pictures one as well, because they've got those strange sort of... I remember my son Ethan, who was probably about he's definitely under 10, maybe 5 or so at the time, wanted so much, he wanted to be the person giving the clues, and he pushed and pushed and pushed to be the person giving the clues. And then his first clue, he took forever to come up with a clue. And the clue he gave when he finally got around to it was, he said, 5, weird. So yeah, they just love that. That's become like a, you know, the lore of our family, right? Yeah, with that time that Ethan came out with that clue. So yeah, that just was the start of it all for us.
Well, I've spoken before how kind of Gloomhaven with my partner, us starting that together when it first came out, had us dive way deeper into the hobby. But even before that, it was just anything that Will Wheaton was playing on tabletop.
Yeah, I was on it.
Yeah, I watched that. Small World as well.
Yeah.
Played that.
Small
but that
World,
was before.
Tiny Epic Galaxies. Yeah.
But I never got into the hobby after Small World. I played it, and that was my first experience, and then I never saw it again, but yeah.
Yeah, so that was really, really kind of impactful early on in my hobby.
Mine's probably, similar to everybody else here, but...
You just saw Tom Vassell on the internet. Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. He's the best. It was, I think it was probably Ticket to Ride. When I think about it, I just walked into the Australian Geographic shop one day and I saw Ticket to Ride, I saw the box and had a look at it and it intrigued me. I was playing games, but standard games like Scrabble and Cluedo and all those sorts of things. But they don't go for very, Scrabble does, but I mean, when you look at Connect 4, it's pretty limited. Like there's only so many variations that
you can only
do.
Connect 4.
Well, that's right. We tried timed things where we had to do it really quick. There's only so much you can do with Connect 4. And then we tried stacking the stacking games. But anyway,
you haven't seen the expansion Connect 5.
Yeah. Shut up.
And the prequel Connect 3.
Oh my god.
That's tic tac toe.
But anyway, I bought Ticket to Ride and I'm not joking, that is when I first smelled cardboard like that. That is actually, I'm not joking, it was probably 2007.
And you've been chasing that hit ever since. Yeah. That first hit is the best, right?
Oh. Yeah, I think it's probably 2007 anyway. And I brought that game home and I unpacked it and it was really great because it had a nice insert. And I remember putting everything into the insert, which was great. And I remember showing my husband, and my husband is not a board gamer at all. And I remember he was in front of the television, probably watching sport or something. And I remember going up to him and showing him the insert and the cards, and I actually got him to sniff it. And he was just looking at me like, this is ridiculous. This is so stupid. And I remember him like leaning over as if to say, can you just get out of the way of the television? But that's probably where it started. And then I think I ventured into Camel Up, which I taught for a long time as Camel Cup.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
It's controversial.
Yeah. But that was probably it. And it was great. Like, games like those were great because my children were young and they could play them before they got a phone. But yeah, they were great. Those games were great.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks for the question.
Yeah. Cheers.
All right, well, if we have any more questions, I think, do we have anyone else? Anyone? All right, we'll call it then. Thanks, everyone, for coming along. And if you, as we've said before, if you'd like to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, on our Discord server, that'd be much appreciated. And thanks for turning up today, and we hope you enjoyed it. And we'll catch you next time. Yep. Thank you.
See you.
Bye, guys.